Blog Talk Radio.
Oh shit. To be continued.
Super Cities, a Millennium, and Paragon Cities. It's Monday night,
just a little bit past 8 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States of planet Earth. I'm your host, Pokemon, and this is Paragon Radio. And I got by with a little help of my friends because tonight, oh, we had tragedy last week. Tragedy across the board. And I'll get into that once I bring on my co-host, ladies and gentlemen. Some people say he's mad. Some others say he's a Viking. Some others, well, I can't repeat on air what they say about him. Holy mackerel. But we call him Mad Viking.
And it seems if it's Goth Day today, so who cares?
It's Goth Day. Goth Day.
See?
Goth or Goth?
Happy, not happy World Goth Day.
So if
who
you're
cares?
Goth... Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. I had the original Goth dance music. Hold on. I have the original. Oops. I got it.
Life is meaningless.
No. It's the
original.
And why
original. Am I sounding like Eeyore?
The original emo dance music. There you go. This is the one. This is the dance that started. This is the music that started the dance craze. You know you want to do the dance. Oh, look at Morty and Alan. And Natalia. Great. Oh, there they go. They're doing the dance. See? We cater to them all. And... Yeah, I love it. It's when they turn, they face each other. Oh, that's funny. Natalia being real emo. I don't want to dance. I don't care for it. And that Alto is still just swaying in his T-pose.
It just doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
They still sound like Eeyore.
Woe is me. Yes, you are. Okay. For City of Heroes players, if you play Champions Online, they added the emo dance, which looks exactly like the dance that they do in the Charlie Brown Christmas special.
Well, I think
a little bit slower.
I think one of them also does it on
little
South
bit slower.
Park.
Oh, right, on South Park one of them does it. Right.
The music's not loud enough. That's what Hell Lord Satan is saying.
Oh, well, pardon me. All right, hold on. Yeah, it's going to go really good. Is that better? Better? All right.
No one wants to be my friend.
Okay,
yeah. Except for we can make the bigger and Owl and Kanga and Roo and Rabbit.
Okay, yeah, now Wolf is in. I can never get the damn thing to work, so I'm just standing here for support. Nope. Well, thank you, Wolfgang Zero. I think it's almost over. But about 3, 2, 1, take it home, boys. Okay. There we go. Oh, there might be a delay with the crowd. What's funny is to us, the music stopped, and they're still emo dancing, so. Morning has stopped. I bet Alan's going to go for another 15 minutes. So, last week, we had the death of Jim Brown, the NFL Hall of Famer, football legend, actor, and activist. If you're wondering, I was talking to a friend, and he goes, was he in anything besides the comedy, I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker? Because you remember he was part of Hammer and Slammer. And the funny scene with a young Chris Rock in the rib joint when he goes, how much are ribs? Well, $5. $5 for a rack of ribs? Yes. How many ribs you get with that? 10. And he's counting. He goes, hold on a minute. Counting out change. How much for one? One rib. Oh, well, 50 cents. I'll take one. One rack. No, no, no. One rib. One rib? I surely am hungry. And then he goes on about the cups. He goes, oh, fuck the cup. Just give me a sip. Just pour it in my hand. I'll take a sip. And he goes on from there, and he has to pay so much money. And he's counting his change, and he goes, like, he goes, and then he pulls up his bankroll out of his pocket. You got change for 100? That's one of the funniest. It's a really funny movie. But what's significant about this movie is it was done by the Wayans family, Damon, Akeen and Ivory Wayans, who went on later on, and because of the popularity of this movie, they went on to make a deal with Fox Network, Channel 5 at the time, well, for me, and they got a show called In Living Color.
Yep.
Oh, I just found out. Judge in the Shadow says from the Contest Central channel, GothCon canceled when an attendee showed up wearing blue jeans. Well, that's no good. Hold on a minute. I tried calling you several times. Your phone wasn't on. Oh, well, there you go.
Okay.
Oh, here he is, Buckethead. Now what? Now what's he doing? Yes, Alto? What? Hold on. I don't know why he's trying to... I have no buttons on this costume. Why is he trying to push buttons on my costume? I don't know what Alto's doing. Wait, where'd he go? I was going to change my costume to something really cool. He would have liked it. Oh, I don't have that costume anymore. Oh. I should have saved that one. What does he have now? Is that a goldfish?
Anyway.
Yes. Anyway, so Jim Brown. Okay, so these are the movies he was famous for, besides I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker. If you remember Mars Attacks.
Yep.
He was the former, he was a retired mm-hmm. boxing heavyweight champion dressed in Egyptian
was
gear.
And he dressed as the Egyptian, yep.
And he was boxing the Martians in the helmets, not cracking the helmets open at the end when they were fighting for their lives. That's great. He was also in The Dirty Dozen.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. I had one more. And there was one more movie. Oh. Hold on. I'll find it. Just had it here too. Oh, I have to talk about that too. Oh, The Running Man. Which is funny because they say The Running Man and it was just on this week and I watched it and I don't remember seeing him in it.
Okay, he was it? Okay, yep. I know who Yaphet Kotto is. I'm guessing he was Fireball?
Maybe. Okay. Yeah, because at that point I had to go in the other room for a few minutes. So, okay, maybe that's what it was.
Hold on, I'll check. Running Man cast. Mm-hmm.
And then, from the world of wrestling, if you watch wrestling in the 70s, superstar Billy Graham, who was the People's Champion, he was Hulk Hogan before Hulk Hogan. Okay, he was Fireball. Okay. He was, how should I put it? Yeah, he was like, he was a superstar. He was like, he was the prototype of the modern wrestler.
Well, also the 80s roid wrestler, because that took a lot out of him.
Right, right. But he was in the 70s, right. Yes, it did, yeah. Notably, Jesse Ventura and Hulk Hogan kind of modeled themselves after him.
And the only thing Dusty Rhodes took out of him was the speech pattern.
Yes, and notably this. I am the man of the hour, the tower of power, too sweet to be sour. That was his big promo. You know, Dusty Rhodes had the Hard Times promo. He had the I'm the tower of power, the man of the hour, too sweet to be sour. He would change that those first two up every once in a while. But he was the champion of the people when he won it. So very charismatic. Before my time, but looking back
on
the
little promo.
I'll be
right back. I got to check base, but keep talking.
Mm. Thank you. I think I will. and then today, thinking all this is over, I checked the news. Like that song, I checked the news today, oh boy. And I find out that Ray Stevenson has passed away. And you might be asking, who's Ray Stevenson? Well, Ray Stevenson was an actor. He died at the age of 58. Let's see, he was an Irish actor starring in films like Punisher Warzone, King Arthur. He was in the Thor films and shows like HBO's Rome. And he's in the upcoming Osaka series. He died on Sunday in Italy. No cause of death was available. I'm trying to see. I'm trying to see who he played as in, I know in Star Wars. You know what, screw it. Go on IMDb for this one. Because these articles, they're not giving, you know, not the information we want. He voice acted a part in the Clone Wars series, or one of those series. Hold on. I will find it. He was in Vikings. Okay, he was Gar Saxon in two episodes of the Clone Wars. And let's see, upcoming project. There's actually three upcoming projects. Casino in Ischia, Gateway to the West, and in Osaka, he's going to play Balin Skull. If I can find that. Okay. He's in one episode, but that one episode, he uses an orange lightsaber. So, and with that, orange lightsabers are now Star Wars canon. Not to be fired from a canon. Part of canon. So. Yes, Mordecai. Well, yes, Volstagg in the MCU from the Thor movies. Yes, yes. Sad time. Yes. Am I doing it wrong? I think I'm doing it wrong. So for all those who have passed, but you know what? I'm changing my costume because I didn't want that to burn. Okay, so we do have some news. Nothing from the games this week. Let's see what we've got here. Okay, so ahead of X-Men 97's release, you can order the official Magneto helmet. Well, this makes a change. Hasbro's helmet prop replicas have recently seemed like an infinite flow of variant paint jobs for Star Wars X-Wing pilot and Mandalorian helmets. Well, the Marvel Studios department, however, has been more selective. They've done their share of Iron Man-style helmets and probably have seen several more Spider-Man in the works. But they also like to make new things, and this may be a first. A realistic, quote-unquote, prop representing an animated series. It's the Magneto helmet from X-Men 97. It's the dream of the 90s. Just to be clear, this helmet specifically comes from the soon-to-debut new animated series, Marvel Studios' X-Men 97. That's not the same as Fox Kids' X-Men cartoon from 1997, but it is a direct sequel to it. Presumably, the two shows will stay similar enough in aesthetic that will have a distinction without a difference. Regardless, anyone wanting a cool, wearable Magneto helmet can now have one for a mere $99.99. I'll tell you what, since you're all good, you tell me you get the Pogo Man discount, you reverse those numbers, good to go. Unlike other prop and helmet replicas by Hasbro, this does not appear to include lights or sounds. It's not like Magneto's known for that anyway. His powers get visualized in comics because the artist has to draw something, but mostly he controls magnetic forces that would be naturally invisible to the human eye. In the movies, a similar helmet makes him immune to mind reading from Professor X, which nobody claims this collectible will do. But since Professor X isn't real, who said he's not real, you bastards? You can always say it does, and nobody can prove otherwise. The helmet does include a stand for display when you prefer not to wear it or have to take it off for such mundane, non-mutant tasks as sleeping. But who's going to sleep when the new X-Men cartoons all drop? The helmet's due in September, X-Men 97, at some to-be-determined date later this year. Time it right, and you could look like the coolest mutant separatist leader on the tube, barring the ones we don't yet know about, of course. Okay, there you go.
All right.
Oh, I didn't mention, I don't think we talked about this one last week.
All right.
Did we talk about the working title for Deadpool last week? I don't think we did. Well, last week, it was according to Cosmic Circus, the Deadpool 3 working title has reportedly been set to Tidal Wave, as Marvel Studios continues to prepare for the impending production start of the highly anticipated superhero threequel. The Ryan Reynolds-led MCU movie is slated to arrive in theaters on November 8, 2024, next year. Its current theatrical release date will pit the film against no direct competition. However, it will still be debuting the same month as Ridley Scott's Gladiator sequel, starring Oscar nominee Paul Mescal. Now, you might be asking yourself, who's in the cast? Deadpool 3 is directed by Sean Levy, who previously worked with Reynolds in Free Guy and The Atom Project. It is being written by Rhett Reese, Paul Wernick, and Zeb Wells from previous draft by Bob's Burgers duo Wendy Molyneux and Lizzie Molyneux-Loughlin. Joining Reynolds, Merc with a Mouth, are returning cast members Leslie Uggams as Blind Al, Marina Baccarin as Vanessa, Rob Delaney as Peter, Karan Sony as Doppender, and Stefan Kapasic as Colossus. And, of course, the film will feature the long-awaited team-up between Deadpool and Wolverine as Hugh Jackman comes out of his superhero retirement to reprise his iconic X-Men role. And McCorn and Matthew McFadden have also joined the cast in undisclosed roles. And, of course, they've assured us it's going to be an R-rated film, just like the first two movies, which would make it the studio's first movie with a said mature rating. And it serves as the first movie in the Deadpool film series that will be released following Disney's acquisition of 20th Century Fox. Okay.
Right.
So,
more
Marvel
see.
News. Oh, what do you got? What do you got? What do you got?
I was going to mention the update. It's quick.
Okay. Yes.
Heroes? Nothing.
Nothing. Okay. City of Titans, nothing. Well, I got some more. I got plenty more news here.
Okay.
We got more on Clark Johnson's Daredevil Born Again character, Cherry. Some new information on Clark Johnson's Devil Born Again character has been revealed, giving fans some potential insight into Cherry. Now, who is this character? Insider at Can We Get Some Toast took to Twitter to state that Johnson's character, Cherry, is similar to Brett Mahoney's role in the Netflix Daredevil series. For those that don't remember, Mahoney, played by Royce Johnson, was an honest NYPD officer who would assist Matt Murdock / Daredevil and Foggy Nelson with their cases and get involved in many of the major plot lines involving antagonists like Wilson Fisk / Kingpin and the Hand Clan. The Insider then also stated that there's no word on if Mahoney will be in a new series. Daredevil Born Again is described as an 18-episode revival of the original, which ran for 3 seasons. It will feature the return of leading stars Charlie Cox and Vincent D'Onofrio as they reprise their respective roles as Matt Murdock / Daredevil and Wilson Fisk / Kingpin. Both characters made their Marvel Cinematic Universe debuts in 2021. Kingpin guest starred as a villain in the Disney Plus Hawkeye series, while Matt Murdock briefly appeared in Spider-Man No Way Home as Peter Parker's lawyer Cox, and also guest starred in 2 episodes of the Disney Plus series She-Hulk Attorney at Law, where he showed off a lighter side of the hero. Oh. Something I had mentioned. Ready for this one? Now, as you know, Ant-Man and Wasp, Quantumania came to Disney Plus last week. I watched it. And I was a little disappointed with the Microverse because they never mentioned the Micronauts. Right? I'm like, all right, they're in the Microverse. I was expecting like maybe something can pass and they see him in the distance. All right, I got to mention this article. Okay, so Tom Wheeler, oh, this goes back a ways. Holy crap. This goes back 8 years. I don't even know if I should mention it. Supposedly, they've been working on, since 2015, they've been working on a Micronauts movie. So what the hell happened to it? All right, if this was news from 20... Okay, hold on. I'm trying to see here. All right, 2017. Paramount sets release dates for new G.I. Joe, Micronauts, and more. Okay. Oh, this is funny. All right, so I guess this is before the pandemic. Yeah, because this is from 2017. Okay, so these are projects from 2017 that Paramount were setting up. First up is a brand new G.I. Joe movie from the studio, which will be released on March 27, 2020, followed up by a Micronauts movie on October 16, 2020. Really? In addition, an untitled Paramount Hasbro event film was set for October 1st, 2021, seemingly unrelated to the Hasbro Cinematic Universe. But still a property of Hasbro. Ready for this? is a new Dungeons & Dragons movie, which will be released on July 23rd, 2021. Nope, move it up, move it up. Let's see. So they've also Visionaries Mask and Rom Space Knight movies are in the works.
Which explains why I found that Rom Space Knight is now back in the Marvel brand.
Oh, this is funny. That is really funny. Holy cow. So nowhere in the Micronauts. Maybe they gave up. Well, hold on. If I click on this one. Eight. Oh, God. Yeah, it's funny. There's like a story from 12 years ago that Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick were drafting a Micronauts script. And then 8 years ago, Tom Wheeler. Another article, Akiva Goldman to lead G.I. Joe Micronauts Writers Room. And then 7 years ago, Hasbro Universe, that's where I just read. So what happened to the Hasbroverse? Oh, what a surprise. Wait, we have one more. Hold on. 2019, Paramount delays the G.I. Joe Micronauts movies. Micronauts was supposed to come out June 4th, 2021. Okay, whether that D&D movie was going to hold the July 23rd, 2021 date remains to be seen. Nope, it didn't. But trust me, when it does come out, it'll be awesome. Trust me. I feel like a time traveler. Trust me, it doesn't come out then, but when it does, it'll be fabulous. Trust me, it's worth the wait. Oh, my God. This is funny. Okay, wait. I never read this part to you guys, but at the end of every article, they have a question for the fans who are reading this. The question is, do you think that Hasbro will be able to successfully bring its cinematic universe together? Nope. What do you want to see in G.I. Joe and Micronauts? A movie. Let us know in the comment section below. Give us a movie. Micronauts. I thought Micronauts was owned by Marvel. Oh, that's right. Micronauts owned by Hasbro. You should have done something with Marvel. They could have been in the Ant-Man and Wasp movie. Well, that explains that.
I would have loved to have seen Bug. I mean, I remember reading the first few comics of Micronauts, and
I have the series in my basement. I know, Bug was cool. Wasn't there a Time Dude with like a Favreau's coffin or something like that?
Well, there might. Let's see. Memory serves me right. The main baddie was like Microman or something like that.
I don't know. No, he was one of the good guys. I think he was one of the good guys. I don't know. Oh, Wikipedia, I go. Wikipedia, please don't fail me on this one. All right, Micronauts Comics.
I mean, I could see him. Big yellow round face. Oh, that was the baddie.
All right, here we go. Here are the team members. Acroyear, energy sword-wielding, stoic and super strong, former ruler of the armor-clad Acroyears of the horse and rocky planet Spartak. Biotron, tall and stalwart, first of the part machine, part organic roboids, who accompanied Arcturus Rand on his 1,000-year mission. The loyal and dependable co-pilot of the HMS Endeavor was destroyed and later resurrected in giant form as a sentient starcraft known as the Bioship. Bug, a wisecracking master thief who is an antenna-headed green insectivorid from the planet Kalaklak. Armed with his rocket lance and his agile wall crawler, Spider-Man, Bug tends to tick when he talks and loves to eat snails.
I get to say, Hell Lord Satan, you got an AFK!
All right, we got Cilicia, mother of a courier's child and his former betrothed, who turned against him when he was forced to destroy Spartak in order to keep it out of enemy hands. Devil, highly intelligent and witty beast-like member of magenta red furred race of savage cat-eared and dog-legged simioids from the jungles of Tropica on homeworld. Fireflight, tiny singing sprite who is part of going, Huntar, formerly the rebellious slum youth, Land 23, who was mutated in the body banks and brainwashed into attacking the Micronauts. After being freed from Prince Argon's mental control, whoever he joined the team so he could get revenge for being turned into a faceless, metal-booted monstrosity with the bio-based ability to grow weapons, or whatever else required out of the hideous and highly malleable amber-hued body. I'm just going through this now.
Well, while you're doing that, I'll do the roll call while you're looking that up. We got
okay.
Hellord Satan, and we got Wolfgang over here on City Heroes at the steps at Atlas Park. And over on Champions Online and WCOC, we have Mordekaeus, Alan, Clan, Rissus, the Nom Nom, Alto Mark 7 version 2, Silver Egret, Natalia Crumstock, and others listening.
Okay, so apparently,
We got a Queen of the Vamps with us as well.
Where?
In between us.
Oh, looking at the wrong game. Yes, we do. I see that. She wants to vamp you. Saying hello to Mad Viking.
Hello.
Apparently, she's a friend of yours. Okay, so,
she was listening. We know that.
I know. Okay, cool. Okay, so apparently then after that, there's something called the Microns. Years later, Arcturus, Marionette, and Bug, all Marvel properties, mind you, reappear as a team called the Microns. They aid the mutant Cable when the scientist Psycho Man abducts the shape-changing copycat. The battle microverse inhabitant Baron Zebek of Aegyptus alongside the visiting super team Alpha Flight, and later assist Rick Jones and Captain Marvel during their adventures in the microverse. In another largely untold tale, they also reteam with the X-Men against Baron Karza. Wasn't Baron Karza one the enemy of the Micronauts?
Oh, like I said, it's been a while.
I know. That name sounds really familiar. But recently been reborn as Ally Thanos, or maybe it's an Ally Thanos, merged several of the subatomic universes. Arcturus Ran and Prince Mary become involved in the Cyclop invasion of Kai Jarella's homeworld. In 1997, Marvel accepted a proposed reboot of Micronauts as a new series written by Sean C. Berry, penciled by Carrie Nord, and inked by Dan Green.
And now I remember to log into the chat, because what I did, I took care of some songs that and sound effects that I'm not using anymore, and it freed up my computer so I can handle stuff again. And there's Bloody Wolfie. There we go.
Oh, okay. And if
in
you remember Marvel's Earth X, if you remember Marvel's Earth X series, the Micronauts play a role in that one as well.
And
okay.
Let's take a chance. What if they want to call us?
Wait a minute. Hold on. In 1998, AGE, Annex Entertainment Gribble, and Kaleidoscope Media Group plan to produce a Micronauts animated series, starting with a 5-part miniseries to air on the Sci-Fi Channel in fall of 1998, followed by a syndicated 26-episode Micronauts animated series for 1999, with action figures and a Marvel tie-in comic announced. And the project appears to be shelved or canceled, of course. Then 2022, Boulder Media was delayed indefinitely as Hasbro sold Boulder Media to Australian media company Princess Pictures. According to writer Eric Rogers, 52 episodes of the series were produced and confirmed the series received a tax write-off. You know, I am getting fucking sick and tired of all this shit, about all these cool stuff. Oh, we did it as a tax write-off. We're destroying it all. No. No. Fuck you. Wait, and the Micronauts homeworld, the Microverse, right, makes a featured appearance in the film Ant-Man, right? Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Now, there's feature film developments here. In 2009, Hasbro acquired the rights to the Micronauts toy line. Paramount Pictures, in conjunction with J.J. Abrams, was in negotiations to develop a movie version of the franchise. The planned project made little progress. Of course it did. Though in November 2015, Paramount said that it was still planning a Micronauts film adaptation. And later in December, both Hasbro and Paramount were planning a cinematic universe combining Micronauts with G.I. Joe, Visionaries, Knights of the Magical Light, Mask, and ROM. All right, let's see here. Late December. Let's see. Oh my gosh, G.I. Joe, Visionaries, Knights of the Magical Light, Mask, and ROM. Several writers. Oh, several. Holy shit. By November 2020, Paramount removed the film from its release schedule. In 2002, Image Comics relaunch was followed the same year by Micronauts, a Time Traveler trilogy, a collection of three paperback novels published by Byron Priest Visual Publications and written by Steve Lyons. Okay. Sorry, Anthony, that's it from the Microverse. But I know I have the comic books in downstairs in my basement. I thought they were the coolest thing. They missed an opportunity, folks. They missed a really cool opportunity to do stuff. That's all I'm going to say.
Now, like I said, you know, I was just reading, you know, that ROM is back in the Marvel Universe. So I'm going like, okay,
right.
Now things are starting to add up.
Right. You know what, though? Before I read the article, I always check on top to see what year the thing came out. It's like, forget it, guys. I can't. This article is 10 years old. So there you go. All right. What time? Oh,
and
yeah. I can't. I got 15. All right.
In. So let me turn this off.
All right. Well, you do that. I'm going to
check that. It's almost there. It's getting better.
It's getting better. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, Justice U was going to be another Arrowverse show. Again, guess what? It got axed at the CW, which brings me. Oh, okay. So TV Line is reporting the Justice U, as well as a series like the live-action version of Powerpuff Girls and a female-led Zorro show, are no longer in development at the CW. So what this show would have been, it would have been led by David Ramsey, who plays John Diggle.
Giggity.
Basically, yes, just as you would have reportedly centered around Diggle, as he looked to recruit five young metahumans to go undercover as freshmen at a prestigious university. There he would have overseen their education while training them to become the next set of major superheroes. Alongside starring, Ramsey was also expected to direct the series pilot. Greg Berlanti, Sarah Schechter, and David Madden of Berlanti Productions were serving as executive producers, with Jeff Johns also attached to the series at one point. So, here's the deal. Superman and Lois actually take place in another universe, which I think is weird because they've you know, remember the Crisis on Infinite Earths thing, and then we had one universe? Superman and Lois were there. So, but apparently they're saying, though, they're in a different universe. So, sadly, ladies and gentlemen, after 11 glorious years of so much superhero TV, this Wednesday night at 9 o'clock, the Arrowverse is dead.
Well,
because
kinda,
the Flash,
just like everything else, they kind of shot themselves in the foot, try to go for the
goal. No, this is what happened. No, it's not them. It's this new company that bought this, that they merged the CW with Discovery, whatever it's called, and the guy that in charge of Discovery, he doesn't like superhero shows. So if you notice, he's canceled Titans. He canceled Titans. He canceled Doom Patrol. That Batgirl movie? Oh, it's a tax write-off. Yeah, finish making it. Yeah, we're going to destroy everything used as a tax write-off. He was filling out the tax write-off papers as they were finishing it. If I was DC, I would get the – I would contract. And get, if I was James Gunn, I would get the fuck out of there. And find another channel. You're telling me there's not another channel that wouldn't want these shows on?
Especially after that Crisis crossover. I was like, damn.
That, well, you know what? That too and the pandemic kind of ruined production on a lot of the shows.
And now we got a strike.
Right. Well, I'm hoping. Remember, he's doing that right. So now once the writer's strike is over. So. Another reason to hold our torches up. The Arrowverse is over. It's all over. I don't even know. Even the shows on HBO Max.
Blade is postponed because of the strike. Yeah, everything is postponed.
All every movie. Everything that's not done yet. Like TV shows. They're supposed to end in May. They're done. They're like if they were done being written and filmed, they could go into post production and finish those. Because as long as nothing new is being written, those shows are done. Like I said, that's why the Flash is having their series finale this Wednesday night. That's the because. It's done already. That was filmed. Everything is filmed. Whatever has been filmed, they could show. It's just any shows in the middle of their season, any shows that, like, have to be filmed. Like, a lot of, I hate to say it, a lot of the Marvel and DC movies now are going to be pushed back.
And here's your chance, Pogo, to make some movies.
Yeah, right? Yeah, because I'm not in the Writers Guild. Yeah. As a matter of fact, this weekend, I sent a script to a friend of mine. I don't know if you guys knew this. But, oh, God, back in – I can't believe it's this long I was talking to him. Back in 2014, I wrote a Christmas story based on an artist friend of mine. He has these two furry cat comic book characters, Mac and Trouble. So I wrote a Mac and Trouble Christmas story. He loved it, and he goes, I want you to do a story introducing Pogo Man into the comic book world. And I finished that on and off. We've been working on it together. I just finished the final, you know, copy of that script last year. He's been sick. I've been busy. So we just finished it, like, last year. So he's trying to find some publishers who will help us get it published with some staff. But I told him a while ago, after I did that story, I outlined it. I said, I had an idea for a story because basically it's like these guys could go to any world they want to, any universe, these two cat characters. And this is years ago, back in the middle of the MCU. What if we did something, Mac and Trouble Save the Multiverse? I gave him the premise, he goes, oh, that's awesome. So, and it's basically they're going to go to, like, different types of worlds, like a Western world, and it's going to be a spoof of my favorite Westerns. Yeah, they're going to go to a pirate world, it's going to be a spoof of my favorite pirate movies. They're going to go to a fantasy world, and spoof of my favorite, you know, fantasy adventure movies. They're going to go to, of course, a martial arts world, spoof of my favorite martial arts movies. You know, things like that. Because the Christmas story I did, it was like, he could tell which my favorite Christmas movie I was spoofing in there. And it's supposed to be comedy.
A little kid beating up another one going, hada, 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 hada,
hada, hada, hada. You know what's funny? I didn't put that scene. I didn't mention that, but there's mention of a BB gun in there. And then mentioning a kitchen has that'll shoot his eye out. It's all very subtle hints. Remember, they're all animals. So they were working at a Christmas mall, and their boss was a giraffe with a curly hair that dressed like an elf when he worked at the mall.
You know what I would have liked to have seen, and it would have saved the movie franchise, except for the, you know, it's, you know, replaced what we actually got. If they did the mask according to the comics, who was the next person to wear the mask?
Oh, I never read that one. So you got me on that one.
It would have been Cameron Diaz's character.
Didn't she put it on at one point?
No.
Or they were playing with it?
Nope.
Oh. You know what's funny? I never saw the second one. Doesn't she?
No. The second one, I don't know what drugs they were on, thinking that was a good sequel.
Well, I didn't see it, but doesn't she? In the second, who does he wind up marrying in that one? Wasn't that supposed to be her character?
In the movie, it is Cameron Diaz's character. Now, in the comic books, Stanley Ipkiss gets shot, and the girlfriend gets the mask, puts it on, and goes on a killing spree. Well, obviously, it would not be a killing spree in the movies because they kind of took that part out in the movie. But
right.
Let's be honest, Cameron Diaz can do comedy.
Oh yeah. There's something about Mary.
Mm-hmm. You know, that would have been perfect, but no.
I gotta bring this up. I was on taking the train one time, and this girl, she had to be in her young 20s, was just making, and she had her hair on purpose, looking like for the 80s. And she was walking around the train making rude comments at everybody. She thought she was all that. Walking past me, and this is when I still had hair, like a lot of hair, windblown, right? I'm trying to fix it, and she's making fun of my hair. I was like, excuse me, what'd you say? I was like, say that one more. I say, say that again. Say that one more time. And she goes, what are you, deaf? No, there's something about Mary. And I said it loud enough for everyone in the train to hear. Everybody busts out laughing, pointing at it. They started taking pictures of her going, oh, my God, he's right. Because she had her hair done just like that. You know the scene I'm talking about? And
yeah,
to her, her hair looked good. And she goes, what are you talking about? And her friend pulled up a picture. He goes, my hair does not look like that. They took pictures, showed her, like, really, there's something about Mary? And everybody, and every time she walked past somebody, they called her that. She sat down in tears going, people shouldn't be so mean. Exactly. And the point was, bullies think they get away with everything until they get it thrown back in their face once.
I'll admit, I was getting a little nervous when you started talking about train, considering what's happening in New York now.
Well, what's happening? Oh, wait, I didn't hear what's happening in New York.
The one guy who put a headlock on that one kid because he was threatening all the people in the subway car.
Okay.
And now it's another war zone. You can see it in the news.
I'll look it up. I'll look it up. Yeah, it's just getting silly and ridiculous. Something must be done.
But anyway, it looks like it's time.
It's almost time, and I had a few more stories to read, but... Oh, yeah, two more stories. I can do them afterwards. That's all right. Yep, I can do them afterwards. All right. So, good Lord, they dress for a funeral. Yes, the Arrowverse is ending. Yeah, okay. Okay. Give me the tome from the tomb.
At least they're not doing, as you called it, the Care Bear stare.
Oh, good.
That one scene from the Crisis crossover.
You got to admit, that was a great call on my part, though. It's the Care Bear stare without the special effects. And I'm watching it, and I said that in my head as soon as I saw it. I'm like, that's the fucking Care Bear stare. Because my sister was a Care Bear fan. So I watched them with her sometimes, right? And I'm going, so basically it's the Care Bear stare without the special effects. See, if it had a special effect, that would have worked. That would have been like an awesome special effect for them to reboot the universe. But they're just like, let's just stare at it. And they're puffing their chest out. I'm like, yeah, it's Care Bear stare without the special. But was I wrong?
Nope.
And what's funny
and
is that's
we were
what made
denied
it funny.
The Wonder Twins and Gleek again.
I know. We never. I got to find on my phone because they talked about the seven shows in order. And then they talked about characters from Flash that you don't or certain characters you don't like. They had Felicity Smoke as the number two character you don't like. Because they said because of her, we didn't get the Black Canary Flash romance.
R.I.P. headphone users? Who made the noise, me or Pogo? Mordecai's going, R.I.P. headphone users.
What happened?
I don't know.
Well, it's going to be a nut because Care Bears get... See, in our generation, we had the real Care Bears. Oh. As a matter of fact, I went to the pharmacy a couple weeks ago. They're bringing them back. They're coming back, baby.
Michael Bay presents the Care Bear movie.
Prepare to stare. And massive explosion. Massive explosion. Okay, this is what... You know what's funny? With Michael Bay, for all his explosions, the Transformer movie, here they go running up the side of a pyramid. Hardly any dirt or stones are moved. Okay, so he loves explosions, and he doesn't get physics. And this is all I remember anybody talking to. I went to a comic book store. I was playing Warhammer 40K at the time. It's like something that massive hitting into the side of a pyramid would either put a hole in it, or you would see massive dust and sand being picked up when they ran, when they put their foot down. Nope, not these Transformers. And why is Alto is blocking with his gun, with his fish gun or gunfish, the Care Bear stare. Care Bears movie, but it's a horror movie. Okay, no. I got to call no on that one. We got that with the banana splits. We're getting that with Blood and Honey with Winnie the Pooh.
I would not pass it till now. I won't put it past them.
But what is it going to be? What? The Care Bear cousins have gone berserk and the Care Bears have to stop them on from their rampage of not being, what, being B-rate, you know.
With Sly Stallone as, what's that one with the blue and the storm cloud on his chest? Gloomy Bear.
Hey, we're going to give them a Demon Bears. You know, I was going to say, that's not how he sounds, but after watching the Suicide Squad when he was, what was the name? The Shark.
King Shark.
King Shark. I was going to say King Shark, but they call him something else in the morning. Okay. You know what's funny? He's going, they're going to fight Demon Bears, but instead of Care, it's the Hate Bears. I have seen something like that for sale online. The Hate Bears. You know what I'm talking about? They're black and they have different symbols. Care Bears versus Hate Bears.
Goth Bear.
All right. Just for today, Goth Bears. Okay, let me get on with this. All right, let's just say, I'm going to make this short and sweet for the intro. If one of your arch nemesis is in this book, you need a major upgrade. Because these are oddball criminals from comic book history. These are members of the Legion of Regrettable Supervillains. And remember, we're doing a twofer from the Golden Age. Ooh.
So in other words, double entendre. Where is Rain when we need her?
That's right. Okay. This one, our first venture into the Golden Age, is an enemy of the Wizard and Roy the Superboy. Yes, I said that. Roy the Superboy. Here we go. Created by Bill Woolfolk and Paul Reinman. Debuted in Top Notch Comics, number 26 of MLJ Comics, April 1942. Weapons of choice: homicidal haiku, sinister sonnets, and limericks. Goodness gracious. The quote, poetry and death, what a rare combination. This villain's name, the Jingler.
Now I got the movie Life in my hand. Mr. Jingle.
Yeah.
Jingle, jingle-ling-ling, jingle-ling, jingle-ling.
And we're off and running, kids. Comic books are filled with deranged and deceitful types from a variety of professions, mad scientists and doctors, evil tyrants, immortal actors, and even a surprising number of terrifying toy makers. Occupying a tiny niche of criminal craftsmanship is a more unexpected baddie, the evil poet, the Jingler, a.k.a. the Jingler of Death. Mind you, it's a Jingler of Death, not just any Jingler. I jingle with death. Jingle, 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 jingle. The Lord begins his career not as a vile poet, but merely a pretty bad one. Edward Fearing, a poverty-stricken poet, redundancy alert, unsuccessfully peddles his rhymes around town, only to have the door repeatedly slammed in his face. If that's poetry, I'll eat it, proclaims one cruel book publisher. The adventure poet. Where am I? That's poetry. I'll eat it, proclaims one cruel book publisher. The destitute poet is caught stealing by a shopkeeper and accidentally kills a man. Holy shit. Bam. All right. Dashing off in a panic, he neglects to notice that his victim clutches one of Fearing's poems in his lifeless grip. But reporters do notice. The next morning, the front page bears Fearing's doggerel in a story about the crime. Once I wrote a little rhyme of people in an older time. Not exactly Robert Frost, but it sells papers. So, they said my verses would never be published. Fearing crows in his candlelight apartment, I had to murder to get out. I'm sorry, I had to murder to get my verse read, but it's worth it. If it's murder they want, they'll have it. He adds, following a train of thought. That's probably crossed the mind of every unpublished writer at some point. Dubbed the Jingler. Fearing attacks, assorted publishing moguls as revenge for their constant snubbing. In one particular gruesome killing, he stuffs a poetry-laden piece of paper down the throat of the publisher, who earlier offered to eat Fearing's words. That'll show him. The Jingler's high-profile crimes drew the attention of the Wizard and his kid sidekick, Roy the Superboy. Sporting a highly trained super brain, the Wizard deduces that all the victims worked in the publishing industry. Some deduction. It's enough of a lead, however, for the Wizard and Roy to determine the Jingler's next target, a renowned literary critic preparing to judge the Jingler's death poems live and on air. Live and on air, I tell you. The confrontation between the Jingler and the Wizard leads from the studio to a high cliff face. How close is this radio station to a cliff face? Down with...
Hey, this is a cliff face. Let's have put a radio station up there. Not just the tower, the whole damn radio station.
It's a lovely view. Sorry, just running that through my head. Down which both men tumble as they do battle. The Wizard lands safely, but the Jingler is dashed against the rocks. In an ironic twist, one of his poems flutters downward and lands upon the now still chest of the larcenous lyricist. His final words, life quickly cools in poets and fools. One more life, my friend, is approaching its end.
Michael Bay presents The Jingler. Plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Oh, what a relief death is.
And the explosion is big enough to see on the top of the cliff face on top by the radio station.
Gonna have fun with that one.
All right. Oh, good Lord. Okay, our next one from the Golden Age. An enemy of Uncle Sam. Goodness gracious.
I recognize the one. Okay.
Yes. Created by Will Eisner. Oh, this should be good. Debuted in Uncle Sam Quarterly #1 of Quality Comics. Autumn 1941. Line of Succession. Prince Pickpocket. Prince Purse Snatcher. Baron Burglary. Earl of Parking in a Handicap Spot. Let's see here. The quote. Why did I do that? I never kicked dogs before, but now I like to kill it. Okay. Why did I do that? I never kicked dogs before, but now I like to kill. I speak of none other. Good Lord. Ah, we got another winner here. The villain's name? King Killer.
To the point.
Right. Not Killer King, just King Killer. Okay. Some criminals are born to great villainy. Others have great villainy thrust upon them. The latter is true of the nameless figure who eventually becomes King Killer. The King of Crime. Sorry, the book slipped out of my hand. Two names we do know are those of Dr. Link and Dr. Blink. What is this, Dr. Seuss? Egg-headed mad scientist.
I was thinking more of Kids Next Door. That was very good, Mr. Wink.
Yeah. Very good, very good. Okay. So they are egg-headed mad scientists. The identical doctors hatch a bizarre and dangerous scheme, collecting the cadavers of recently deceased notorious criminals. They set in motion a plan to create an arch-fiend and super-criminal whose unstoppable powers of evil will make them rich, which Ilger and direct... There. Hold on. Wait.
Round two. Speak.
Thank you. Thank you. A plan to create an arch-fiend and super-criminal whose unstoppable powers of evil will make them rich with ill-gotten gains. Okay, so what unstoppable powers of evil? The sinister surgeons packed the slim frame of their test subject, a 98-pound weakling from the streets, with the brains of some of the underworld's most infamous killers, thieves, hitmen, and gangland chiefs. A hardy translation. Hold on. I got smudge on my glasses. That's the problem here. I got smudge on my glasses. Holy shit. There we go. Took me long enough. Much better. Wow, much better. A hearty transfusion. There we go. Oh, my God. Of gorilla blood completes the operation. Remember, folks.
More gorillas.
If you want to make a truly evil killer, make sure you use gorilla blood. A transfusion of it. Because that'll always complete the operation. In the place of the once slight figure rises King Killer, 7 feet of muscle and murder. His teeth have grown into fangs. His clothing is stretched and torn over his newfound superhuman muscle, and a terrible scar runs across the top of his skull, a reminder of the criminal brains that now drive his body. King Killer lives up to his name, both parts of it, in fact. In short order, he murders the bully who once tormented him, slays a shopkeeper for the contents of a safe, and snuffs out Dr. Blink and Link when they exhibit the audacity to ask for a cut of the goods. By thunder, he bellows in a triumph. From now on, I take what I want. What King Killer apparently wants is to indulge his royal side with uncontested power over a sovereign state in the Republic. He brings together almost every criminal in the United States in the middle of the open desert, where they build their own city of crime. Before long, Congress gaining officers. Hold on, where was it? Just lost my spot. Middle of the open desert where they build their own city of crime. Before long, Congress is voting to admit the new state of Rex to the Union, unaware that they're granting King Killer his fondest wish. We shall be the haven of every criminal in the country, he boasts. A kingdom of crime in the heart of America. And I am the least... Wait, why am I losing my spot tonight so fast?
Ludger and Mrs. Wife Tales, and Hell or Satan is truly the Lord of Satan. Lord of Hell, I mean.
I guess. He brings together almost every criminal in the United States in the middle of the open desert, where they build their own city of crime. Before long, Congress is voting to admit the new state of Rex to the Union, unaware that they're granting King Killer his fondest wish. We shall be the haven of every criminal in the country, he boasts. A kingdom of star.
He's gone again.
Yeah, it's... God bless. What's going on? We shall be the... A kingdom of crime at the heart of America.
Also, wrong show!
But...
He goes supervillain by zodiac sign. It's like, wrong show.
I know. Wrong show. Should be, okay. I'm kidding. A veritable army of crooks is more than happy to take up residence in the evil domain. They commit crimes in nearby every town and race back to Rex, eluding pursuing police once they cross the border. These antics eventually bring Rex and its ruler to the attention of Uncle Sam, the apotheosis of the patriotic hero motif, while other star-spangled superheroes like Captain America and the Shield draped themselves in flag-like costumes, Uncle Sam was the real deal, not just a guy dressed like the famous I Want You poster, but the Uncle Sam. Tracing his origins back to the days of the American Revolution, Sam used his tremendous powers to fight for America in every battle, from Valley Forge to Normandy Beach. Obviously, a rogue American state is just the sort of thing to get Uncle Sam's red, white, and blue blood boiling. Soon, an epic battle ensues on the fields of Rex as Uncle Sam and King Killer put their equally titanic strength to the test. The clash lays waste to the entirety of the recently created nation. Uncle Sam prevails, and the would-be despot is imprisoned in his own dungeon. Of course, in later issues, King Killer escapes to further bedevil Uncle Sam. He even invites Hitler and Mussolini to visit his new kingdom of crime. Luckily, Uncle Sam is there to put an end to that scheme, too. And there's an editor's note. Both King Killer and Uncle Sam were the products of Will Eisner, one of comicdom's most prolific and influential creators. His most famous character, the Spirit, faced off against an array of unusual foes, including the actor-turned-villain Mr. Midnight, the buzzard-loving Mr. Carrion. Oh, my God, this font they're using is horrible. Mr. Carrion. And the mostly unseen master of crime, the Octopus. Which is funny, because if you saw the movie The Spirit.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to call shenanigans on that as best-known character, because Uncle Sam was actually brought back in the Brave and the Batman, the Brave and the Bold cartoon.
Right, for the Seven Soldiers.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And he was also one of the reasons
the
why Final Crisis was building up, because it was his team that pretty much got hit. Phantom Girl,
right.
Amen, Condor. So, yeah, I call shenanigans.
Well, all right, we have one more. And since we're done with the modern age, this goes... Oh, this will be very interesting. Okay. So this is a villain of, or an enemy rather, of Ant-Man. Created by Stan Lee, Larry Lieber, and Jack Kirby. Debuted in Tales to Astonish, Volume 1. Number 339. Sorry. Enemy of Ant-Man.
I didn't hear a Stan Lee character on this one, but go ahead.
I know. Yes, I know. Debuted in Tales to Astonish, Volume 1, Number 339, Marvel Comics, January 1963. Not to be confused with the Blue Beetle, any of them. The quote, "At last, you've met your match. Ant-Man, even you can't stop the hordes of the Scarlet Beetle. I speak of none other than, as you can guess from the quote, the Scarlet Beetle." It would be very unvillain-like for a menace to confront his foe on equal footing. Take the evil Scarlet Beetle, who challenges the insect-themed and similarly small Ant-Man, because he can literally face his opponent eye to compound eye. The Beetle may not prove much of a menace to Ant-Man, who possesses his full body strength, even at the tiniest size, and commands an army of ants to boot. That's why the Scarlet Beetle deserves credit for stealing Ant-Man's size-altering gas and turning himself into a six-legged colossus. The clash of tiny titans begins as Ant-Man is alerted by his loyal ants to an insect menace brewing in the sewers of New York. He investigates and finds something of political rally with insects, hundreds of them, gathered to listen to a talking, clearly intelligent, red-hued beetle. For ages, the human race has ruled the earth. The scarlet beetle tells the assembled throng. But now, due to radiation, which accidentally hit me during one of mankind's atomic experiments, he continues, wait, hold on. This book keeps slips out. You know, I was cooking before and my hands are all greasy and slippery. I got to put this down somewhere. Hold on, all put right. my leg. Hold on a minute. All right, sorry about that, guys. This is what's been going on all night. The book keeps slipping out of my hands. All right, he investigates.
Just imagine the technical difficulties sign with the girl from Impanium playing.
Okay, got it. All right, the Clash of the Titans begins. Ant-Man is lured by his loyal ants. All right, gathered to listen to a talking, clearly intelligent red-hued beetle. For ages, the human race has ruled the earth, the scarlet beetle tells the assembled throng. But now, due to radiation, which accidentally hit me during one of mankind's atomic experiments, I have been given a brain, which is the equal of any human's. He continues, we insects, who number in the trillions, shall seize control of the earth from mankind. The scarlet beetle orders his followers to attack Ant-Man, and once in possession of the hero's canisters of size-changing gas, enlarges himself to an intimidating size. Meanwhile, Ant-Man's captors place him in a small hole, which is a pretty good way to deal with him when you think about it. As the Beatles' armies sweep the earth, they break down human civilization. Termites can be as large. Here we go again. As the Beatles' armies sweep the earth, they break down human civilization. Termites collapse the communication network by chewing through telephone poles. Spiders envenomate political leaders. Bees disrupt television and radio stations. And presumably, all the everyday beasties show up just to ick everyone out. Yes, my army of evil insects will ick you out. That's how I'll deal with you. Sir?
Yeah.
Yes, General. Yes, Private. The army of insects, they're icking us out. I see. Mm-hmm. Very good. But Ant-Man escapes and puts the offense.
SpongeBob.
Ick. I can just see these ants, these giant insects. Ick. They're icking us out. Okay, but Ant-Man escapes and puts the offending insects to the rout, subjecting the beetle to a dose of shrinking gas. The hero doesn't hold a grudge. He uses scientific devices to remove the bug's radioactive enhancements before setting him loose in the garden. Go ahead, little fella, he coos. Crawl away. It wasn't your fault you became radioactive. It was just a strange quirk of fate. True. And what would comics be without those?
And that's it.
That's it this week, kids. That's it this week for our entries from the Legion of Regrettable Supervillains. There you have it. Okay, so what is this? You want to do this one, or you want to wait till Wednesday night for the Supervillain by Zodiac? Since that's
we'll do it
thing.
Wednesday. We'll do it Wednesday.
Okay.
Because we got less than 5 minutes.
Oh, Aldo says get giant bug spray. Okay. hold on. Do I have time for these last? Okay, so here's the thing now. Bradley Cooper reportedly turned down Superman Legacy Lex Luthor role. Fresh off his latest portrayal of Rocket in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, Bradley Cooper has apparently turned down a substantial Superman Legacy part, the role of Lex Luthor. According to Insider,
Lex Luthor.
That's right. At my time to shine age, Cooper was offered the role of the iconic Superman villain by Superman Legacy director James Gunn. Though the actor turned it down, the original rumor was simply that Gunn spoke to a Guardians of the Galaxy cast member about the part, furthering the director's previous statement that his Superman movie would have members of the Guardian Guardians of the Galaxy cast. And the okay. Something else I want to bring up. I forgot who started the rumor. About what's her name? Mila Kunis being sought after to play the Thing.
Yep.
That rumor is false.
Okay.
Whoever started it, it wasn't Mila Kunis. So.
Well, I told you that they were just going nuts on the internet.
So whoever started that rumor, they said that person is unreliable. Also here, it looks like, okay, hold on. What is this? What is this? All right, Secret Invasion video shows Nick Fury waging a personal war. He's seemingly going on the run while taking on a personal battle. And in a video titled Fight, Fury meets Olivia Colman's Sonya Falseworth, who asks why he hasn't called any of his special friends, assumably referring to the Avengers. Fury explains that this war is one that he has to fight alone because this one's personal. The video shows a number of the series' major characters, including Emilia Clarke's Gaia and Martin Freeman's Everett Ross. Let's see, who's in this? Reprising Nick Fury. He's going to team with Captain Marvel's Ben Mendelsohn, returns as the pseudo-leader of the Skrulls, Talos. This marks Nick Fury's first solo project in the MCU after 15 years as the former S.H.I.E.L.D. Joining them are newcomers Kingsley, Ben Adir's antagonist Gravik, Oscar winner Olivia Colman as MI6 agent Sonya Falseworth, Emilia Clarke as Talos's now adult daughter Gaia, Dermot Mulroney, Killian Scott, Christopher McDonald, and Carmen Ejogo. We'll also feature MCU vets. God, I can't talk tonight. Colby Smulders as Maria Hill, Martin Freeman as Everett K. Ross, and Don Cheadle as Rhodey.
So glad we didn't have the drinking game with the Ship of Heroes. You would never have made it tonight.
Oh, he's just fine. All right, I want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight. Quick reminder, next week, no show. We're taking, in the United States, it's Memorial Day celebrated or observed. We're taking the week off, so we'll be back in 2 weeks. And after the way my mouth performed tonight, I think I need it. Yeah, thank you. So read those comic books, read those superhero novels, watch those TV shows, watch the superhero movies, and pay homage to the Arrowverse. Arrowverse, we will miss you. Anything you'd like to say in closing, sir?
Hey, good night, Gracie.
Good night, Gracie. And stay tuned for the Greatest Generation podcast on dawnradio.org and Embrace the Dawn. We'll see you all in 2 weeks. And I think we're done.
All right.
I think we're done.
And as soon as I beam into the base, then I start the episode.
All right. So before you beam into the base, let me stop the episode here. All right. Thank you, sir. I'll see you Wednesday night. Oh, we got to get together this week and start talking about the Dawn.
Yeah, I've been waiting.
Well, I don't know when you're available, so let me know when you're available. I'm trying to go with your schedule.
Usually.
All right. I'll try and do something tomorrow night. Are you on tomorrow night or no?
Well, I'll be airing Super Sounds.
Okay.
And it's not me on air. It's, you know.
Right. All right. Okay, right, of course. So, all right, we'll figure something out. All right, I'll talk to you later.
All right,
have a good night. Talk to you later. Bye. Good night. Good show. Bye.